Federal interest rates are set to stay elevated after the latest Fed meeting, and the housing market has still not recovered from the pandemic. I'm your host, Matt Meir. I'm the managing editor of the Bigger Pockets blog, and today we're going to jump right into this first story. So last time I talked, I went over economic predictions and why economists are nearly always wrong. And today is just one more example of how badly they can be off. So this is about the federal interest rates and the Federal Reserve. Once again, Federal Chairman Jerome Powell giving us indications that rate cuts might not be actually happening. So let's set the scene. At the very beginning of the pandemic, the federal interest rate, which is the rate that banks loan money to other banks, those interest rates were slashed to nearly 0% at the very beginning of the pandemic to uplift the economy. Why would they do that? Well, during the pandemic, obviously, we had massive COVID lockdowns that basically shut down a lot of businesses that were considered non-essential. There was a lot of turmoil. There was a lot of uncertainty in the environment in general, banking, etc. The federal interest rates went down so that it would be much easier for banks, lenders, and businesses in general to get access to funds. That keeps the economy moving. It keeps it going. And so long as that's happening, the risk of a massive recession was significantly lower, although we did happen to hit a recession in that period, induced by the contraction in the economy. But either way, having those interest rates low kept everything moving. The problem is that they remained low for a very long time. And this is where a lot of the criticism around the Federal Reserve starts. So Federal Chairman Jerome Powell, who runs the central bank, he suggested in 2021 that inflation, which was a reaction to the supply chain shocks that were occurring during the COVID pandemic, it was a reaction to the amount of money that was being lent out because of federal interest rates being so low, because of government spending. There was a massive stimulus package that was passed by the federal government and sent out, whether it was to you directly in checks or via the PPP loans that were given to businesses to keep payroll and employees on the books. He suggested that inflation was transitory, quote, transitory, basically suggesting that the root cause of all inflation was due to supply chain shocks. That is effectively what that meant. The problem is that inflation hit 9% shortly after. And anytime inflation hits 9%, which inflation being the cost of goods rising over a year period. So for instance, if inflation is 9%, that means that in whatever month that might be, which was May of 2022, prices on average were 9% higher than May of 2021. That in mind, the Fed waited a long time to raise the federal interest rate, which caused inflation to jump. And because of their false belief that it was just supply chain shocks, inflation continued to run rampant in the economy for a prolonged period of time. Finally, the Fed decided to start raising interest rates. And once they started raising their federal interest rate, inflation did come down, albeit not as much as they wanted it to. And that's led us all to the problem we face today, which is the consumer price index, which is how we measure inflation. It is a measure of a basket of goods that consumers and services use. So that includes energy prices, it includes housing, it includes food, groceries, etc. It's still 3.5%. And the federal target has always been 2%. The federal target is always 2%. So at 3.5%, that is considerable. So in March, CPI, Consumer Price Index, was at 3.5%. What does this mean, though? And we'll get right into that after the break, and we'll discuss why it matters, especially to real estate investors in particular.
Okay, almost time for the show. We'll get right into it after this quick break. Meet Rent App, the seamless, secure, free way to collect rent. Built by a team of fintech veterans behind Square and Cash App, Rent App uses ACH bank transfers to deposit funds directly into your account.
You don't even need to download anything. Rent App Setup is straightforward for renters, and there are no apps for landlords to download. Both get peace of mind with a digital transaction history. That means no more lost checks, managing a dozen different payment apps, or even wondering whether payment was sent. Landlords say Rent App is the most convenient way to collect rent, and we think you'll agree. Rent App, the free and easy way to collect rent. Learn more at rent.app/landlord. That's rent.app/landlord.
The dream of owning a vacation home can be daunting. From finding the best guests, to the maintenance, to organizing the cleaners after every guest day. With Vacasa, they make that dream into a reality. As a full-service vacation home management company with vacation homes in key destinations across the U.S., they know a thing about how to make owning a vacation home easy and profitable. On top of proactive property maintenance visits by professional local teams, a hospitality-driven booking platform, and around-the-clock support, Vacasa earns homeowners an average of 20% more revenue from their vacation homes. Vacasa is always thinking of ways to simplify the vacation home owning experience by putting your home to work for you. If you're looking to make more from your vacation home, work with the reliable property manager, and finally have peace of mind, partner with Vacasa at vacasa.com/biggerpockets. That's vacasa.com/biggerpockets. You're trying to close on your next rental, so why is your insurance company dragging its feet? With long lead times and never-ending paper forms, it's no wonder it takes forever to finally get a policy. Modern investors deserve better. They deserve Steadily.com. At Steadily.com, you'll get fast, affordable landlord insurance available online 24/7 in just a few clicks. You can even get next-day coverage, which takes just minutes, by the way, to obtain. And you can do it all from your phone. Steadily was founded by landlords who created insurance products tailored to the unique needs of this industry. It's their sole focus, and that's why landlords nationwide consistently rate them 4.8 out of 5 stars. So whether you've got a single family, short-term, or multifamily portfolio, Steadily.com can secure the best coverage at the best price to protect your properties. Discover how Steadily can save you both time and money on your rental property insurance. Visit Steadily.com for a commitment-free quote tailored to your needs today.
Welcome back. So before the break, I said I was going to explain why this matters, especially to real estate investors, because it really does. We all think that the Federal Reserve is sort of this boxed-in entity that controls the economy at large, and it doesn't really impact real estate, but that's completely wrong. It impacts real estate almost as much as anything else does. So if we go back to what economists were saying at the beginning of the year, and even late last year, rate cuts were widely expected to come sometime around mid-year. Even some projections had it this month in April. They are not happening. And I said at the end of last year, in fact, in an article about GDP on the Bigger Pockets blog, which you can go read at the Bigger Pockets blog, that unless inflation falls, the idea of the Federal Reserve cutting rates seems completely improbable. Now, why would we even want rates to be cut? Well, it's pretty simple. It has to do with mortgage rates. So whenever the Federal Reserve increases the interest rate, it becomes more expensive to take on debt. It's more expensive to get money. If you're getting a mortgage, you can assume that anytime the rates are higher, your mortgage is going to be significantly more expensive and vice versa. So that's why we want them to decrease as investors, because it's cheaper to get debt so that we can buy more houses. When I wrote that article, everything I said turned out to be true, because as of last week, Jerome Powell, our federal chairman, announced that rate cuts are not in the cards for the near future, and that because of continued job growth and continued inflation being in that 3.5% range, there's no rationale to cut rates at the moment. In fact, there might even be a reason to increase rates because inflation still hasn't come down to the 2% mark. Job growth is still improving at a significant rate. And the reason why that matters, and you think, okay, well, job growth is good. The problem with it is that whenever you raise rates, the idea is to make sure that the economy contracts in some way, because you don't want it to get too hot. We want rates to go up to stop job growth so that businesses pull back on their spending, which in turn reduces inflation. But instead, it hasn't made a difference and job growth keeps going on. And therefore, there's literally no reason whatsoever to cut rates. So for investors, what it means is that mortgage rates not only are going to remain where they are, they're potentially going to get worse. So for example, mortgage rates are pegged to the 10-year U.S. Treasury bill. Now, 10-year U.S. Treasury bills, they're bonds, they're 10-year bonds. You can buy them. And the yield right now is about 4.6%. The spread between mortgage rates and bond yields, and this is somewhat of a complicated subject, but all you really need to know is that the spread is the percent difference between a mortgage rate and a bond yield. So if the bond yield is 4.6% and the mortgage rate is 7.6%, specifically the 30-year fixed rate mortgage that you would get for pretty much any property, that's a 3%. That's a higher than average spread historically, but that's what we're actually looking at right now. And as U.S. Treasury bill yields have gone up, mortgage rates have also followed suit. And because U.S. Treasury bills are in some way a indicator of investor confidence, rising yields usually means less confidence. It means that there's more demand for those Treasury bills because they're generally considered the most secure asset on the face of the earth. And so if more investors are flocking to them, what does that tell you about risk in the economic environment? It also means that mortgage rates are going to continue increasing, if not stay in that 7.5 to 8% range, which while historically in the middle of what mortgage rates have been throughout history, it is significantly higher than what we've been dealing with for the past decade. And that's had huge repercussions to an already stagnant housing market. So that asks the question, does the pandemic from 4 years ago still cause today's high interest rates? Or is that just some sort of conspiracy? That brings us to our next story. So ultimately, there is an argument in the world right now that the pandemic is still, to this day, impacting the housing market. Not in the way where COVID's running rampant or anything like that, but the conditions that were created because of the pandemic are still problematic today. There's really three main factors here that characterize the post-pandemic market. One is inventory has been extremely constricted. That's kept prices up. A renter nation, as renting is far cheaper than buying. So there's just more renters than ever before. And then low mortgage rates were locked in during and before the pandemic. And that has contributed to some of the issues that we're facing today, which are characteristic of the Federal Reserve's policies. So let's start with inventory. Inventory, or what we would call housing supply, so the number of homes for sale listed on the market, they've been extremely low since the pandemic started. The first half of the inventory problem was characterized by the rapid purchasing of properties. Basically, it wasn't that inventory as a whole was low. It was made low because demand was so hot during the early months of the pandemic. If you remember back then, people were putting in 40 offers on one home, and that created these massive bidding wars that sent housing prices skyrocketing. But on top of that, it just meant that homes would go on the market one day, and the next day they'd be sold. And so with that in mind, yeah, there was homes, there was inventory, people were selling, but it's not like today's market where today, inventory is low, and yes, demand is lower due to the higher mortgage rates that we experience now, but prices are still elevated because supply is not matching demand, despite the demand being lower. And that's what kept home prices as high as they are now. And that, in a way, makes it feel like we are still in a pandemic. We are still dealing with home prices that are astronomical. But on top of that, we kind of live in a renter nation now. That's a phrase that you could attribute to the United States at this point, especially in certain markets. So with home prices so high and the cost of a mortgage skyrocketing in the wake of the pandemic, renting, albeit more expensive than it was pre-pandemic, in many cities, it is cheaper to rent than buy. And it's not even close. In some of these cities, it is so astronomically expensive to buy that renting is about the only option. Why does this matter for a real estate investor? Pretty obvious. It comes down to cash flow. For example, a home that used to cost $1,200 a month to own and $1,300 to rent out would have netted you $100 in cash flow per month. Now, because of higher mortgage rates and on top of that, higher prices to buy the home in the first place, that same home could cost $2,000. But because rent growth did not match the level of price growth, it's only $1,600 to rent, which means you're actually losing $400 in cash flow every month. So long as those conditions hold, the idea of investing for cash flow is extremely difficult. And yes, cash flow exists in some markets. Think Pittsburgh, think Buffalo, think of some of these secondary markets like Charlotte. You can cash flow there, albeit in certain zip codes. You can't just go into the market and assume you'll find it anywhere. But with enough effort, you can find a fixer-upper or a low-end deal that you can actually cash flow on. It's just so much more difficult than it ever used to be. And if mortgage rates, like we were talking about, are going to increase or even just hold, it will continue to be extremely, extremely difficult to cash flow. And then finally, the third issue that came from the pandemic is what's now called the lock-in effect. We've talked about this a lot. The lock-in effect is basically this idea that there was a period of low interest rate mortgages that were issued to a lot of individuals. So think 3%, 2%. And as interest rates rose, especially in a quick period, so like 2 years, they went from 2, 3% all the way up to 8%. Anyone who had those original 2 to 3% mortgages are less likely to actually sell their house in return for an 8% mortgage that they'd have to go buy somewhere else. So that's what we call the lock-in effect. The lock-in effect is a direct product of the pandemic, and it is because of the interest rate response to the inflation issue that was caused because of the pandemic. So yes, we led off this story by asking, is the high interest rate environment that we live in now a product of the pandemic? And the answer to that is 100% absolutely yes. There is no other way to look at it. Interest rates would not be 8% right now for a mortgage had there been no pandemic. They just would not. The Federal Reserve would not have raised the federal funds rate all the way up to 5.5% had there been no pandemic. We probably still would have been around the 2% area. There's a whole argument too about how that 10-year lead up to the pandemic of having low interest rates and low mortgage rates were actually problematic in the long run. But we cannot discount the fact that the pandemic did not upend the entire world of real estate. So where does it end? Does it even end? You think as a real estate investor, like this has got to be one of the worst periods to invest, probably since the 80s. Here's the thing. Real estate is local. Some markets have actually, quote unquote, recovered from the pandemic. Once again, I'll point Pittsburgh, Buffalo, and those other secondary markets that I mentioned. These markets, if you are interested in actually investing in these places, they're characterized by a few things. One is steady growth. They didn't explode like Austin or Boise did. They maintained steady growth through the pandemic. From even before the pandemic, there was no massive explosion of growth. When I say growth, I mean home prices, rental prices, even population growth. They also have cash flow potential, which is measured by rent to price ratios. So basically, you're looking at how much it costs to rent on average per month versus the price of the home, and you divide those two. And then you're also having to look at migration stability. Now, there's a lot of great websites that can give you information on migration. Redfin is one of those. You can look at where people are actually looking to buy a home on Redfin, and it will show you which cities they're coming from, where they're going, etc. Once again, because of the pandemic markets of Austin and Boise, and especially the New York and San Francisco declines in population, there has been a lot of movement to some of those cities like Pittsburgh, Buffalo, and the other secondary markets that I keep mentioning. So the window on actually investing there is closing because people are more interested in living there because it's cheaper. But that also does mean that the reverse is true, that those other markets that used to be the hotspots, you might actually be able to find better deals there because people are leaving en masse. And so you want to look at migration stability. I cannot emphasize enough on how important migration is. So anywhere where migration stability, steady growth, and cash flow potential, those are the places you want to look at right now. That wraps up our last story for today. We covered Federal Reserve struggles with inflation and the potential for steady, if not higher, rates as the continued impacts of the pandemic affect them, and then the other impacts that the pandemic had. You can read all about these topics and trends on the Bigger Pockets blog. You can go to biggerpockets.com/blog to read more. biggerpockets.com/blog. Once again, my name is Matt. I come on this podcast every 2 weeks to give you the best stories in real estate, and I will see you next time.